From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. It's Friday, which means it's time for a special edition of our Reporter Roundtable. For the first part of the show today, we're going to talk about some of the political campaigns that happened across Illinois and go through some of the results. Joining us now to talk more about this is Mawa Iqbal, State House reporter for public radio stations across Illinois. Mawa, welcome back to The 21st Show.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Listeners, I should say, in order to make our schedules work, we tape this conversation on Thursday afternoon. There may be some additional results that come in, so be aware of that. Also, we're not taking calls because of that, but you can always let us know what you thought by emailing talk@21stshow.org. All right, Mawa, how is the Illinois State House looking post-election this year?
So it's looking pretty much as it was before the elections this year. Obviously, for context, for those who don't know, in the Illinois legislature, we have a Democratic supermajority, which basically just means that it's a supermajority Democrat House and Senate. In the House specifically, there are 78 out of the 118 House seats that were controlled by Democrats, which means that they had well over the simple majority needed to pass a bill out of the chamber and well over the 60% majority, or I'm sorry, the 60 votes needed to be, or 60%, yes, majority needed to be veto proof. So if the House wanted to override a governor's veto, they could do that just with the Democrats alone, not even reaching across the aisles. And so, you know, going into the election, the Democratic Party of Illinois, I talked to the chair, Lisa Hernandez, and she said that their goal, which was echoed by House Speaker Chris Welch, was to not only maintain that supermajority, but to grow it as well. And so there were up to six House seats that they were looking at that were held by Republicans that they wanted to flip blue. And so, obviously, the AP still has to call a handful of races as of Thursday evening. But of the races that they have called that the Democrats are looking to flip, those three Republicans have maintained their hold. So they were not able to flip them blue. And those representatives are Jackie Haas, Nicole Laha, and Jennifer Senalitro, who are all representing districts in the Chicago suburbs. So there's still four House seats that are held by Republican incumbents that are still at play. But honestly, like looking at the AP results so far, it looks like the Republicans will be able to hold on to those seats. So kind of thwarting the Democrats' plan to grab any more seats for them.
You know, it's remarkable that is the sort of area where we're talking about them playing, because I did a little quick math here. You said they have 78 seats out of 118 total. That's 66% of the seats in the legislature. If you look at how the top of the ticket, at least before Harris, who did a little worse, Democrats typically get about 55% of the vote in races for U.S. Senator or governor. So that's really remarkable, and I guess a testament to the map making that Democrats have done, that they've been able to draw these districts in such a way that they can really maximize their advantage. So what sort of reaction have you heard from Democrats this week?
Yeah, so I mean, the Democrats are very, you know, thankful that they were able to maintain their blue wall, so to speak, in the State House. The Democratic Party of Illinois released a statement today, or maybe yesterday, I'd have to check. But they were basically saying, you know, like people came out to vote for the Democrats, you know, and this was an attitude that was shared by Chair Lisa Hernandez and Speaker Welch about how the reason why they wanted to obviously grow their supermajority was because they felt like, you know, the Republicans in Illinois have gotten so far out of touch, is their words, like so far out of touch with constituents across the state. And they want to keep upholding their democratic values of working family rights, of protecting access to reproductive care. So it's really, I mean, it's this sentiment that Republicans are just so focused on dividing, and Republicans are so out of touch and don't, quote unquote, don't know what's best for their constituents. Now, when I talk to the Republicans, you know, before the election, I haven't reached out to them now as the results are starting to come in. But before the election, you know, I spoke with House Minority Leader Tony McCombe, who said that, you know, she's disappointed to hear Democratic leadership talking like this, but she's not surprised. She said that, you know, with the gerrymandering, she calls very aggressive gerrymandering, towards the Democrats. It's, you know, Republicans definitely have an uphill battle to try to reclaim some power in the legislature. She said that when it comes to where her party stands, specifically in the House, they're just looking to try to do their best with the maps that were drawn. So just trying to maybe flip one seat, you know, each election to just slowly but surely claw their way back into, you know, relevancy in these next 10 years that these maps are in effect.
Yeah, it's a long road ahead. And we did hear from the Republican Party this week, as I'm sure you did as well, saying, you know, it's playing a waiting game to slowly inch its way back to party. But Republicans have had some issues with infighting in the past. The House Republican caucus has not been immune to that. Has that affected them in any way?
I mean, it's tough to say. You know what? When I talked to Toni Maccombi, she definitely wanted to seem like the party was united and that they were helping each other out, and you know they were going to fundraise for each other. She said that we don't have Ken Griffin, right, like CEO hedge fund billionaire Ken Griffin in the state anymore to you know help out with fundraising for campaigns. So we're just going to have to rely on each other to you know knock on doors and stuff. But certainly, like you said, there definitely has been some infighting. I think with the more far right Freedom Caucus members, which are a minority within the minority party. It's there. There's I believe a handful of House members who are part of the Freedom Caucus. And then there's Toni Maccombi, who represents, you know, like the more, I guess, moderate, willing to be bipartisan Republican. So it's interesting to see where she takes her party. I mean, she's definitely looking at it from like the long term view of just trying really hard, you know, every single year to just claw their way back. But it's yeah, they definitely do have some friction to contend with. That's for sure.
Last thing I want to ask you about briefly, the Illinois voters had three advisory questions. I'm sure some people were surprised by all that text at the beginning of their ballots. One of them did focus on reproductive health and procedures like IVF, for example. Talk a little bit about how that turned out.
Yeah, so basically the ballot question would be, should all medically appropriated assisted reproductive treatments like IVF be covered by health insurance plans in Illinois? And this was something that Democratic lawmakers in the spring session really made a big point to try to expand access and insurance protection to IVF treatments and all the different you know, medical visits and additional rounds and medication that one would need if they were to go through IVF. And so it ended up passing. The voters voted yes for this, which wasn't very surprising, I guess, to just given how, you know, like the Illinois has become like a safe haven for abortion rights, and that also translates over to reproductive rights in general. And so, but the thing to note here is that this is an advisory question, meaning that it's not binding. So it's not saying like, okay, now that the majority has voted yes for this is going to happen. Now we're going to see insurance plans in Illinois. They are definitely going to now cover IVF treatments. If that still, you know, has to be hashed out in the legislature. So now the lawmakers are going to go back to the drawing board. They're going to take a look at how the voters decided, and they're going to talk about, you know, what more can we do? And like I said, because it's a Democratic supermajority and this was a Democratic-led effort, I think we could definitely expect to see some more IVF insurance coverage protections in the future.
Mawa Iqbal, State House reporter for Illinois Public Radio Stations, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey, and we continue talking in our reporter roundtable about Tuesday's election outcomes, specifically here in Illinois. I want to turn now to Will Bauer, Metro East reporter for St. Louis Public Radio. Will, welcome back. You covered the 12th, 13th, and 15th congressional districts. That's basically almost the southern half, maybe even a little more of Illinois. What happened? What happened? Don't keep us in suspense.
Well, no surprises, I suppose, would be the easiest way to summarize what happened. And it was a good night for incumbents, would be another way to phrase it. So, Republican Mike Bost of the 12th Congressional District, right, would represent the maybe southern third of Illinois, won a sixth term. Democrat Nikki Budzinski, who represents the 13th, which would stretch from the Metro East to Springfield to Urbana-Champaign, where you guys are. She won a second term, and then Mary Miller did not face a contested race in either the primary or the general elections, so she'll have a third term. Yeah, none of the races were all that particularly competitive, although we did have a little reporting error, which made and I see and some what, funny business happening in Champaign?
I think you're talking about there were two issues in Champaign County. One of them had to do with some vendor having some technology issues in the morning. But then apparently people were waiting in line almost 4 hours after the polls closed
until
to
11
vote.
PM.
Yeah. And so no results were released. Obviously, Champaign-Urbana is a big part of this incredibly gerrymandered noodle of a district. So that was holding back her vote totals, it seemed, for several hours.
Yes, yes. And so I guess the point being what we thought was going to be a really quick night ended up being a good night for her. She won by 15 points, 57.5% to 42.5%. Ended up being a little bit longer of an election night than I'm sure most people were anticipating. But yeah, a win is a win. So I'm sure they're still happy with the results in the Budzinski campaign.
Yeah, and on both sides of the aisle down there, the Democratic drawn map doing what it was meant to do. So you, I want to, because you have been covering, you're one of the few reporters who's been covering these downstate counties, voting on partition, or maybe you can call it secession from, you know, of having Cook County and the rest of Illinois become separate states. What happened with that?
Yeah, so the one in particularly that we were really interested in was Madison County, which is just north of where I'm talking to you from today. And Madison County is I would call a suburban county, right? In that it has it's got a population of 265,000 people. And a majority of these counties that have all voted on these advisory referendums, so like Mawa was saying earlier with the IVF question, right? It's not actually a vote of seceding. So all these counties that have passed these are still part of Illinois, right? This is just a symbolic measure to signal support for something. Anyhow, all the other counties had been rural. So Madison County shows, and it passed 56.5% to 43.5% in Madison County. The idea behind Madison County was it shows that it's maybe not just an urban versus rural divide, but that it's a broader downstate versus Chicago divide that's forming in the state of Illinois. So yeah, not surprising, another including Madison County, seven counties would have passed it, but the others would have been rural counties.
And just advisory, we should emphasize that. There's no legal effect here. And in fact, we even interviewed a Madison County board member months ago who was in favor of this and kind of didn't really sound, I'll say it candidly, he didn't really sound like he had the courage of his convictions to, like, you know, take up arms against Chicago or something like that. This was really just wanted to make their voices heard is how he was saying it.
Yeah, yeah, I think it proves a point. And the way some people here locally in Madison County have phrased it to me is it's a wake-up call to Springfield or a wake-up call to Cook County just to express, you know, the discontent that they feel because obviously, Chicago has gigantic population. Over 2/3 of the state live in that kind of Chicagoland area, so they dominate the politics. And what may work for Chicago and the urban policy that maybe comes out of, or the policy that comes out of Springfield may be good for urban Chicago, but this movement would feel like, hey, you know, we're not urban Chicago. We feel like we would legislate differently if we were better represented in Springfield, so on and so forth.
Absolutely. All right. The other big storyline for me coming out of Tuesday night for Illinois was how much weaker Vice President Harris did than both President Biden and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton when they ran in Illinois, and how much better Trump did. What does that portend for Democrats in the future in Illinois? What have you been hearing? And especially if Governor Pritzker, say, for example, decides to run for re-election, which he has not been clear about yet.
Yeah. Well, yeah, first off, it was a little surprising, right? Illinois being as blue of a state as I think people assumed, you would assume that Harris would win it by more than 8 percentage points. So first off, I think that's just surprising and probably shows the weakness of the Harris-Walz ticket nationally.
Glad you said that, because that's half as good. Biden and Clinton both got 17 points over Trump.
Yeah.
Harris just 8.
And I think a lot of people would also say that the Hillary Clinton campaign was a weak campaign and did poorly in all of the swing states, just like Harris did. So anyway, that is a really interesting point. But I suppose if you're J.B. Pritzker, you do have a path to 2028 now running in that Democratic primary to potentially be the Democratic nominee, right? So because if Harris had won, you would just assume because she's a younger person that she would have ran again in 2028, and there wouldn't have been an open primary in 2028. So the fact that the Republicans won, Donald Trump is going to be the president again, and Pritzker has been a chief critic of Trump for a long, long time, especially during COVID and whatnot. I think he'll he'll be one of the names that people are watching a lot over these next couple of years on whether or not he'll run in 2028. But I suppose before then, he's got to figure out if he's running for a third term in 2026 here in Illinois.
Yeah. And other interesting questions. Senator Dick Durbin is going to be, his term is expiring in 2 years as well. He'll have to be deciding whether to run for re-election. I'm sure a lot for Democrats to think about in the weeks, months, and long years ahead. Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio, thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Brian.
Coming up after the break, we are going to be talking with Linda Kenyon, Illinois Public Media's Washington correspondent, about a more national perspective on the election and its aftermath. Later in the show, we're going to be talking with an Illinois high school student who was recently recognized as one of America's top young poets. More to come after a short break. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us.